Welcome, everyone, to the talk, Automated Malware, Discriminatory Effects of Welfare Automation, presented by Marco and Katja from Expert Group on Digital Topics from Amnesty International. In this talk, they will present the case studies of welfare automation from India, Serbia, and Denmark, based on research by Amnesty International. Let's give them a warm welcome.
Thank you so much, and welcome to our talk on social malware. We are Marco and Nadja, and we are part of a group of Amnesty Germany working on human rights in the digital age. So we are not staff members, we are volunteers, but there's also a tech team within Amnesty on an international level working full-time on tech and human rights. And some of the topics we are working on in the German sections include targeted surveillance, predictive policing, the business model of large social media companies, migration and tech, or artificial intelligence. And throughout the Congress, you can find us at the Bits and Bäume Habitat, so please come and stop by for a chat if you are interested in what we're doing. We would also like to announce a workshop we will be hosting later today. The workshop will discuss the human rights implications of artificial intelligence and will take place tonight at 8:30 p.m. in the Bits and Bäume workshop area. So hoping to see you there. But what we are going to talk about right now is the effects of automated decision making in social security systems. And you may wonder why we as a human rights organization are looking into this. The right to social security is a fundamental human right. It is recognized and protected by international human rights law. And Article 9 of the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and Article 22 of the International Declaration of Human Rights recognizes the right of everybody to social security. And the findings we are presenting today are the outcome of several years of research conducted by Amnesty International. Amnesty spoke to several affected people affected by automated decision-making in social welfare, spoke to government officials, analyzed the underlying systems wherever possible, and summarized these findings into a couple of reports. Of course, there were also some obstacles to the research Amnesty did in this field, as many of the systems are black box systems, so governments would not grant Amnesty access to these systems. And a technical evaluation or audit would rely on a full access to documentation, code and data, and government bodies argued with intellectual property rights and did not want to reveal the inner workings of these systems to be fully public, because the argumentation is that people seeking to commit fraud in social benefit systems would then better know how to do this. So several freedom of information requests were denied or went unanswered or were partially answered. Amnesty also offered to conduct an audit to pinpoint problematic outcomes together with the respective governments, but again were denied access. So this is the basis, just to let you know what research was done and what limited access to different things we had in doing this. When we are talking about the digital welfare state, we are talking about that states are increasingly using digital technologies in their social protection systems. And this can include introducing automated or algorithmic decision making in either granting social benefits or in fraud detection. This can include digital application processes for social assistance or creating digital databases to store and process personal data. The growing use of digital technologies in social protection systems is presented as a neutral solution to improve coverage, administration, fraud detection, and overall security. But the reality is that there are severe human rights risks that were uncovered in this report. So research shows how digitization can lead to more inequality and marginalize vulnerable groups in what we called tech-enabled inequality. So technologies are not value neutral. They are never value neutral. It is virtually impossible to create a value neutral technology, as technologies are introduced into societies that contain social, political, and structural forms of discrimination, thereby often reinforcing existing discriminations and inequalities. For example, algorithms for fraud detection assume usual or typical lifestyles of people and flag those as potential fraudsters that are not within that norm, thereby often targeting migrant communities. For example, because they tend to live in intergenerational households more often, or they have ties to their country of origin, and all this may be indicators that flag that something is unusual and not within the norm of the country that the systems are deployed in. We do have unintended consequences, so negative effects are not necessarily intentional. Digital systems can have unpredictable effects, especially on marginalized groups facing intersectional discrimination, which means multiple forms of discrimination. A huge factor are psychological effects. So those interviewed during the research, especially individuals with disabilities, said that being under constant surveillance, just to prove that they deserve to receive their benefits, is a deeply stressful experience and had very negative effects on their mental health. It may increase barriers to access. Digital systems can create challenges for people who have low literacy, who have limited access to the internet, who have disabilities or have financial constraints. And this is limiting their ability to access social protection in the first place. What we also see is a high link to austerity measures. So digitization often comes alongside of cuts to welfare budgets, narrowing the criteria of who receive social benefits. And a very last but very important thing is what we call an algorithmic imprint. So even after the discriminatory systems are removed and rolled back, their imprint lingers, and institutions and people's lives take a long time to recover from such systems once these discriminatory effects take place. Datification is another aspect that we were looking into. Personal data is collected and processed extensively, thereby impacting individuals' privacy and data protection rights in exchange for access to state support without there being an alternative or a possibility to opt out. Whatever the state offers is without an alternative to people if they really need those assistances offered. This leads to what we call welfare surveillance, where digital technologies are used to monitor and track applicants or recipients of social protection extensively. And in doing so, states often employ third-party companies. That means they outsource the technological aspects of to third-party companies that may take a profit-oriented approach, rather the approach of accessing social benefits for those really in need. And often the goal is to minimize governance spending. And at the same time, public administrations lack the knowledge or the skills to exercise a meaningful oversight over these programs. This may lead, the datification of social services may lead to fears of accessing services, where concerns over data misuse may deter individuals from seeking social protection. And of course, the impact of flawed or outdated data can lead to incorrect decisions for eligibility, often until proven otherwise. This means that the proof is on the side of the recipients, and examples of flawed data leading to denied benefits may be a wrong status of employment, assets, income, or simply being alive. Because in India, for example, a faulty algorithm declared elderly individuals as deceased, denying them their allowances until they proved otherwise, which is quite tricky and took some time. But before we go deeper into the country reports, we will also have a look at India later. Marco will tell you more about automation and social protection. And yeah.
Thank you.
You hear me? Great. So, automation and social protection. So what do we mean by automation? So it's usually a fully or semi-automated system to determine people's eligibility for social protection. And it seems that this is, could be easy to distinguish if it's fully or semi-automated. But we will see in a minute that it's sometimes kind of a mixture of both. As Nadia already said, the promise of automation always is that we improve governance and access to benefits, but in reality, often the budgets are reduced and services are eliminated. And what we very often read in public statements justifying automated systems is, like Nadia already noted, the topic of fraud detection. And we will see in a minute why this is greatly the contrary of social benefits. The next problem of automation is the automation bias. What means that people tend to believe an automated system more than any other source of information they are able to access. Even if they are contradicting, they rely most on the results of the automated system. In the Netherlands, for example, there were thousands of families who lost their social protection on grounds of wrong data, which were processed by the automated system. And then the system decided that they will lose the social protection. And it was a very hard fight for remedy. The government decided sometime later that they will be all reimbursed on a flat basis. So they didn't look into the cases individually again, but just reimbursed a flat sum. And these biases and reduction of services is an also coupled with surveillance. And this surveillance comes twofold. The first is the surveillance of the receivers. So we all know that artificial intelligence systems need a lot of data, though many governments just collect all kind of data to feed into the system in order to get a better working decision algorithm. But on the other hand is the surveillance of social workers. So the ones who are at the position in a semi-automated system to challenge the decisions of the artificial intelligence or of the automated system won't do this because they themselves are surveyed and have to justify themselves when and if they contradict the automated systems and are in many cases strongly discouraged from doing this. So this is why semi-automated and then fully automated systems are not as different as it seems on the first glance. Yes, and we already heard something about discrimination in algorithmic decision making. I just want to make a few short points. So the main problem is the reproduction of bias. So automated systems tend to reproduce and reinforce bias of humans, and this is sourced by three items. The first are the programmers or stakeholders who have certain predefined views which they want to find in the algorithm, and which is just come from their experience, from the personal kind of experience, not from hard data. So, for example, in Netherlands in 2021, one of the fraud indicators was the nationality of the receivers. The second point is a selection of training data. Of course, we all know the internet is not bias-free, so you have to put some work into selecting training data which do not have an internal bias. And it's not only hard, it's quite almost impossible to define such data. So you have to define them for your special purpose and really prove that there's no bias in the way you use it. This next point is the training process. The humans were used to train the artificial intelligence may be able to introduce their own bias into the outcome. And finally, simply the way artificial intelligence works. It is looking for correlations, so it is looking for biases and tries to find them and tries to use them. So it's hard to fight bias when you use an artificial intelligence system. For example, there was an inquiry into algorithms for recruiting and how can you prevent them to discriminate against women. And the first idea was simply to eliminate gender from the application forms. But then the artificial intelligence found other information which strongly correlated to gender and used them to discriminate again. So in effect, the artificial intelligence discriminated again against gender. This is a difficult problem and not easy to solve. So I give back to Nadia.
Not yet. India is still yours.
Right. don't give you back to Nadia. We are coming to the country reports now. So we have Amnesty conducted a series of four or five reports within the last 4 or 5 years into automated welfare systems in different countries. And we want to present some of the reports with the most clear results. So the first one is India. There we have the Samagra Vedika, that's the algorithmic system to identify and classify welfare beneficiaries across various government schemes. And the core component of this is an entity resolution, which is called Entity Match API of Samagra Vedika. And this is used, you have a lot of different databases, and the names of the persons are filled in very differently, either in full or in different order, or just with initials, and you have to identify which ones are the same people in these different databases. And this is done by this Entity Match API. And of course, social welfare is not a playground. It has strong consequences for beneficiaries, if they are elected or not. And so the system has to make sure that there are not many mistakes in the sense that you have not many negative results so that social protection is denied. And the problem of these kind of APIs is that you have to define some cutoff level for what is a match. And this cutoff level defines as well how many false positives you will get, as well as how many false negatives you will get. That means you cannot minimize both at the same time. And false positives means I identify two people, two entries in two databases with the same person wrongly. And this means you have probably you're stating the people has more assets than he really has. And so this leads to denial of social services. And false negative means you do not see that people across databases are the same. And so you don't see any assets like cars or anything which they may own. And then you do not see that there may be fraud in the system. So the government wants to minimize false negatives, and the cost is a greater rate of false positives. And this is also what Amnesty found in analyzing the API. So that's the only thing we got. We got we could buy access to a similar API of the same company which provided the services to the Samagra Vedika. And it showed an error rate which is compatible to Al Jazeera's report on failures of the system for thousands of people who were denied social protection on the ground of false data and false identification. And like Nadia already said, the individuals have to prove that the decision was wrong, which is virtually impossible because you don't have any means to prove anything. Denmark is one of the most recent reports. This was from this year. The authority is Utbetaling Denmark, and ATP is its public-private partner. So this social protection system is a kind of a public-private partnership, and the algorithmic part is more or less the thing ATP does. So here, Amnesty had three kinds of methods: studying literature, interviewing people like journalists and politicians and individuals who tried to get social benefits, or groups who were marginalized by the systems. And the most strong one here was the Freedom of Information Act. We are in the European Union, so we have a more or less working Freedom of Information Act. And in this way, Amnesty got the documentation of this system, but not the data or the code. Denmark is really using a lot of automated systems in social welfare. In 2019, it was approximately 60 different AI and ML algorithms in use. And the amount of private data which are used by the Danish authorities was really extremely. So that's what we call in the report duvet lifting, because you look really like everywhere and even under the duvet to see what people are doing. So the system collects not only from digital sources or from analog sources, and even encourages neighbors to snitch on the neighbors and tell them what they are doing and what they have, do they have a car or anything like this. So this is where beneficiaries feel and are surveyed constantly, and this leads really to mental health problems. And the final point here is that the system highly discriminates. In Denmark, we have already a legislation and a society which is kind of more hostile to asylum seekers and migrants than in other European countries. And in this context, these automated systems reinforce these discrimination of marginalized groups and migrants on grounds which are, on first glance, not really discriminating against nationalities, but in second glance, if you correlate it, then it isn't this kind of discrimination. And last point, there's no oversight and no clear way to remedy if there are wrong decisions. ATP has no, conducts no human rights due diligence or any kind of tests if their systems are discriminating or not, and does not teach its staff about the discriminating dangers of the systems and the implementation. Okay, now I give back to Nadia for Serbia.
Thank you so much, and I think we need to hurry a little bit with only 5 minutes left in the presentation. But Serbia is actually our last country report. And in 2022, Serbia introduced a social card law combined with the social card registry, which is a centralized information system which uses automation to consolidate personal data of applicants and recipients from official government databases. And together with semi-automated decision-making, the system is since then the backbone of the social benefit systems. And Serbia already has a very inadequate social assistance system with very low income thresholds that exclude many in need and live lie way below the poverty line. So the income threshold to be eligible for social assistance is 97 euros per month. Although the minimum wage is 460 euros in Serbia, and the social assistance will also be 97 euros. So this is already, as you can see, kind of a flawed system. But the social card law made things even worse, as the number of recipients dropped within little more than a year after the introduction by 35,000 people. These may not all be related to the social card law, but giving a rough perspective on an indicator of what this could mean, while the poverty rates in the country remained relatively high. So we do have flaws in automation and inaccurate data that misclassified wrongful denial of benefits, misrepresenting income status, or attributing income or assets to people they never have. One case study was done on a woman who tragically lost her daughter and could not afford to pay for the funeral. And an NGO in Serbia decided to support her with the costs and transfer the money to her bank account, which then led to a fraud detection because she had more money than usual on her bank account, and her social benefits were cut, and she was only able to get it back like months later because of a one-time payment. So also what Marco said before is we do see an automation bias. So before, we do have the human factor, we have social workers who decide on cases, and they know and can contextualize decisions they are making. And they can talk to people and get their cases and get all the information they need. Now the sentence that was heard the most is, there is nothing I can do, this is the new system from Belgrade that's making the decisions. And this is not true. Social workers were totally able to overrule a decision the algorithmic decision system was making. They just were poorly trained. They just didn't know it. So this is also a part of automated decision making that is often overlooked, that neither the ones who apply it within the decision making nor those people affected by it do have really the information to know what's going on and what's underneath this and how to come to conclusions that may differ from a computer's. So another example is that people from the minority of Roma, they often sell scrap metals from cars that broke down. And these cars are registered to their names, thereby the system determines that a person who owns 5 cars can't be eligible for social security benefits. However, lots of people fail to deregister those cars after selling the scrap metal because they simply don't know or don't have the access to deregister because they don't have the information that this is going to affect their status in regards to their social benefits. So Serbia failed to inform those people about the social card registry and how certain things could affect their status. There's also a lack of remedy. Losing social assistance is super easy and happens fast. Getting it back may take several months and it's complicated, unnecessarily putting people through economic hardships for longer periods of time. There's a lack of transparency. There's no information on how semi-automated decision-making works, neither for recipients or social workers or decision-making process or for NGOs. The system also prioritizes identifying reductions rather than increases. So the registry is updated periodically, but it prioritizes tracking changes in household conditions that lead to a decrease of social assistance, while if you want to apply for an increase in social assistance, you would need to reapply. And with a 0-minute sign, we come to the conclusion and recommendations, because we wouldn't be Amnesty International if this would not come with a list of demands to states. So talking about accountability and human rights standards. States should use technologies in line with human rights standards on privacy, equality, and non-discrimination. They should ensure companies involved in social security systems comply with human rights standards. And states should provide meaningful accountability, remedy, and redress for human rights harms linked to the use of technology. Transparency and the right to remedy in digital technologies is essential when digital technologies are used in the public sector, and especially then. Risks arise from black box system where data and decision-making processes are not disclosed or there's a lack of transparency. So states may disclose systems detailing intellectual property or trade secrets, but human rights impacts should always take priority over such concerns. States should maintain transparency in decision-making processes and in the data used. So technologies must be interpretable, accessible for rights holders to challenge decisions, and a lack of transparency would prevent individuals from understanding or appealing those decisions. States must provide accessible information of how systems function, the criteria and appeals process, and should take a human rights assessment over the full system's life cycle. Monitor essentially to prevent harm during implementation, and if a system is found to cause harm or discriminate, it must be rolled back. Last is the need for an inclusive development, so policymakers must involve diverse and representative perspectives in the design and implementation of digital systems. And with that list of demands for the implementation of automated decision making in welfare systems, we would open the floor for questions for the last couple of minutes. And on the last slide, we also included the QR codes to the respective reports that are publicly available. So if you want to have a closer look at methodology or anything else, please feel free to scan the codes while the slide is still up. Thank you so much.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for the talk and the examples. Because you also said that in the end that many people kind of like trust the AI decisions more than they would trust humans. What do you think are steps that can be taken, or like education that can be done? Like, how can we empower people more to question these kind of decisions, like especially people who are not super digital?
Well, the point I want to make is, I think the systems have to be more transparent. So I think we're talking about explainable AI, which really tells you why it is deciding how it is. And then you can build trust on this, I think. That was.
Yeah, I'm working for a public administration body for myself. So.
You're not taught.
Yeah, there. I'm working for a public administration for myself, and it's very difficult to educate anybody and everybody on the internal logics and functioning of an algorithmic decision-making system. But the one thing that should always come apart is that the decision is not always right, and we are able to challenge those decisions. And I think we need an approach of digital literacy within all parts of government bodies, no matter if it's the social or if it's IT or if it's, I don't know, geo-information systems, maybe the best educated part. There should be more of a digital literacy and understanding in all parts of it. And I think that's a very crucial step towards it. But it's a super complex question. I think it's the answer is also very complicated. I think there are a lot of talks also here that would dive deeper into the question of how to bring knowledge and skills to the people who are using digital technologies. But maybe for now.
Yeah, hi, thanks. And a question from the stream. Is there a form of public money, public code in Denmark? And do the authorities know what the private partner is doing? Or who decides what algorithms and BIs are used?
Okay. Okay. You mean if there's an in Denmark they're using public code? The effort is Europe-wide, I think. But I don't know if Denmark have there taken any steps. I would be surprised.
Not that I know that it is enshrined in the law that we have public money, public code in Denmark. Of course, we have a strong freedom of information.
Yes, yes we have.
But still, it is only, it consists of many parts. I think we do have the algorithms, the source code itself, you have the data the system is fed with, and you have all the technical writers' requirements and so forth.
Right, so in Denmark, we just obtain the documentation, not the data, not the code.
And exactly.
What was the second part of the question?
Hi. I strongly support your final. I forgot the word.
Slide.
Yeah, like the points that
the demands.
Thank you. I'm also working in for a digitalization of public bodies here in Germany, and I know like these points are like demanded by other institutions such as Algorithm Watch as well. And so I think from my perspective, we have the tools, we know what we should do. It's a matter of priorities, and the question is, how do we get the public bodies to put more focus on these points besides making headlines in the case of Serbia and the examples you gave?
That's a very good and very complex question. And I think there are different approaches to it. The one thing would be to think big and have a public money, public code strategy, to say that everything is open by default, to get the transparency and to really have this overview function that civil society can take on. Another part would be to bring in partners to have a common audit, like Amnesty offered to do audits. They would sit together with partners within the government or civil administration, and they would have a look into those systems. And we do see some parts of that when governments decide to bring in tech staff, tech people mainly, to work with them on topics. But I think this also needs major improvement to think in this way as a collaborative effort. And the other obvious solution would be to change laws to prevent states from doing something like that, to operating black box systems, to having a lack of information towards the people that are reliant on public services, for example. Freedom of information, always a great tool to bring such things to light. And yeah, I think there are many approaches, and Amnesty is obviously also looking into strategic litigation, like to go to court for a very specific case and to make a point and get others to follow along. I think for many government bodies, this whole system of we have a database and we have an algorithmic decision-making system, it's fairly new, there are few skills. So I think we are now paving the road to how this will be done in the future. And I think it's very important that all civil society organizations do have an open eye on that.
Yes, so it's important to get away from the paradigm that automation makes everything cheaper. Because that's...
or fairer.
Yeah, that's the error. So we must be politically clear that automation is there to improve the process, not to make it cheaper.
Thank you. I have two questions. If the time runs short, then maybe the first one is more important to me. You mentioned that it's difficult for individuals to, I think, raise a complaint if they are either left out or discriminated by a system. Are there any attempts of a way to make it easier for individuals, some kind of platform or community whatsoever? And the second would be, you mentioned the digital imprint. If you could, if you mean it in a general way, like forming prejudice, leaving attitudes behind, or if, are there concrete specific examples of when a digital imprint was left, when a system was removed? Thank you.
Maybe the second question is very quick to answer. With the digital imprint, I meant that, for example, looking into Serbia, when you have 35,000 recipients that were taken off those benefits and all have to individually reclaim their right to social security, this is something that lingers for a very long time. And also to determine that somebody was wrongfully accused of fraud or something, this is still in the social workers' minds, this is still in society's minds if it's discriminatory. So it's the whole complex. It's each individual case, but it's also the prejudice that lingers. So both factors that you mentioned come into that. The first question, is there an attempt to have a platform where people can seek remedy into their cases? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I have not seen one.
No, I think there's in some countries you have some ways of doing it individually, but mostly it was triggered by public reports like Al Jazeera or other journalistic bodies. Which then led to a bulk compensation of the cases.
So if the cases are enough, or the media attention that these cases are gaining is enough, governments may decide that they will not have the individual cases checked, but reimburse people on a larger scale.
One last question for to add to your call to action as a very nice finish. Do you need volunteers? I'm assuming you need volunteers. And if yes, what kind of skill set are you searching for? How can people join you?
Amnesty is always looking for volunteers, of course. It is possible to join any local amnesty group. So most larger cities do have local amnesty groups. This is a very good starting point, as I think lots of local groups do also need the expertise in the digital field.
Yeah.
On a larger level, it is always possible to contact us. I will, there it is. Bring back the slide, and the email address is info@amnesty-digital.de. You can always reach out if you're interested in our topics, or of course just come by at the Bits and Bäume Habitat and talk to us about the best ways to get involved.
Yes.
Thank you for the talk.
I'm